The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers. We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks so much for joining me on this Thursday. I'm live from Florida. We're actually in Tallahassee at the state capitol in the great state of Florida with a room full of amazing young people, patriots, and the next generation of leaders. Hey, thank y'all for joining me for the show. So That rumbling that you hear is not a storm coming over, hopefully not a hurricane coming over Florida. Maybe it is a hurricane of liberty. Hurricane of liberty coming over the... Not that everybody here with us is from Florida. We got folks here from all over the country, but most of them are from Florida. And being in the Florida State Capitol is pretty cool because Florida has certainly been leading the way in the fight for liberty. Ron DeSantis has been, in my opinion, the greatest governor, not only of my lifetime, but probably in history. He's just done a tremendous job of standing against tyranny and standing in the face of the COVID cult and Pope Fauci and all the rest. And was the first governor in my lifetime, first politician maybe in my lifetime to say, hey, I was wrong. I got it wrong. It won't happen again. And then turned around and did a better job in 2020 than any governor in the country. So I love coming to Florida, and I don't mind at all when my friends like the Savoyas just rub it in and tell me how much better Florida is than Texas, because I am thrilled to see Florida doing so well. So anyway, we've got 16 to 25 year olds here with us, and they are they're basically learning the legislative process. Y'all had your swearing in today. You got to hear from a fantastic governor who did a fantastic job. A tremendous state of the academy given in the it's actually the old Senate chamber here in Florida. We're normally on the House floor here in Florida, and they're doing some renovations and other people here, and it's just a mess anyway. So we're actually getting to use the historic Senate chamber, which has been kind of cool. And so well done, Governor. That was tough to overcome. The sound, right? No microphone. It echoes in there. And yet everybody was just drawn into your speech, and you did a great job. So thank you for setting such a good example. And then tomorrow they will be back out there. Well, first they're going to go into committees. So in the morning, y'all all have your committee, first committee process. Everybody, well, not everybody will get to lay out their bill, but whoever the chairman in each committee invites to lay out their bill will get to lay out their bill. And then hopefully some of those will pass, and we'll hear them on the floor tomorrow afternoon and have an opportunity to debate. So it really is a legislative simulation. Our legislative simulations at leadership congresses are so much like the real thing that when we are on the real House floor, visitors will come to the Capitol, and invariably they will come to the back of the chamber and ask me, like, man, I didn't know the legislators in this state were so young, because they think it's the real session, because it is so much like the real session. And that's on purpose. We designed it that way 25 years ago when I was a legislator, because we wanted these young people to experience what it's like to be in the hot seat, to be on the real House floor, be in those committee rooms, and actually experience a real legislative session so that they know. I'm saying they, I should be saying you, since you're all sitting right in front of me here, so that you know you can do this. This is not some other world where there's a different breed of people that are the legislators. In fact, we're kind of tired of the politicians that only think about the next election. We're looking for patriots that think about the next generation. And that's what we're raising you up to think like. And so I just wanted to share with the audience what it was like to be here and be a part of a leadership Congress. We did this a week or two ago in Colorado. We did the radio program from our Colorado Leadership Congress. And then we had an Idaho Leadership Congress last week, and this week in Florida. Later, we'll be going, a few weeks, we'll be going to Delaware and then to Indiana. And we've got one, of course, our big one in Texas. And so I do want to make sure that our audience knows, and more importantly, the audience that's sitting right in front of me right now knows, that we have a tremendous, maybe the best opportunity I've ever been able to offer to you with Patriot Academy to spend an entire month at the Patriot Academy campus, a 30-day, what we're calling the Patriot Academy Patriot Institute Summer Intensive. That's a mouthful. If anybody can repeat that back to me right now, I'll give you a full scholarship to go. Can anybody say that? Okay, Governor, go ahead. Let me see. Oh, it was perfect. She did it. Okay, you have a scholarship to come if you want to come to the 30-day intensive. So there you go. Now, the rest of the story is that's a $2,000 scholarship that covers everything for the whole month of July. You get there July 2nd. You go until August 2nd. The first 3 weeks, you'll learn from Adam Curry, the podfather himself, the man that invented the podcast with Steve Jobs 30 years ago. He lives right there in Fredericksburg, goes to our church. He's the guy that handed Joe Rogan a Founder's Bible a month or so ago. Anybody see that clip went viral? That's Adam. He's fantastic. Laura Logan, an incredible journalist. She'll be teaching on journalism. I'll be teaching a course on the Declaration and government and all those things. Chris Dunham, a lot of other folks are going to be there to teach and inspire and train. We're going to have a fantastic time over that 30-day period. Now, Governor, I have to tell you, I actually have 20 more scholarships to give out. So we had a wonderful donor from your state right here in Florida that stepped up and gave $100,000 in scholarships. So I have 50 scholarships to give out. And I think we've already given out 30. So I got 20 more to give out. So anybody listening right now to the radio program, but more so those of you that are sitting right here, because you will have been through a Patriot Academy. I'd love for you to apply for this scholarship and you get a full month. So all you gotta do is get there, drive, you know, hitchhike, I don't know, row a boat, whatever. You can't get there maybe that way. Yeah, you could from Florida, right? You could get in a boat, go to Galveston, Texas, and then get out and walk the rest of the way to Fredericksburg. Somehow you got to get to Fredericksburg on July 2nd, because we're also on July 4th going to have a fantastic Declaration of Independence party, and then we'll be 1 year away from the 250th. So in all seriousness, I want to offer a scholarship to everybody in the room that would be interested in coming, or at least the first 20 that apply. Governor's already got one of them, so we're down to 19. So grab me right after this and let me know if you're interested in that. If you're available July 2nd to August 2nd, that's a $2,000 scholarship. We're going to make it available to you to be able to come and enjoy it. And since Tatum turned me down on doing the whole month, that's another one available. But she's coming last week of July. Right. So super busy in July. I get it. Anyway. All right. So let's open this up. So you guys tell me what, especially you that are freshmen, you're allowed to ask questions too. But those of you that are, I see red tags on your senators. So you've been to Patriot Academy. This is at least your third year. Some of you it's fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th year. I don't know how long the longest. How many of you have been here 4 years? This is your fourth year to be at a Patriot Academy. Okay. How many of you have done five? This is at least your fifth year. Six. All right. You got the record at five. There we go. So anybody that's been here for multiple years, I want to hear from you. Like, what's the most important thing you've learned from doing Patriot Academy programs? And for those of you that are freshmen, I'd love to hear from you. What is it you're hoping to learn? Like, if this is your first time here, what inspired you to come? What made you decide to come? And what do you hope to get out of this in being a legislator for a few days? And then we'll open it up to any question you have. Constitution question. You might have a question about history. You might have a question about this legislative process. We're going to let the students that are here at the Leadership Congress ask the questions today, not taking live phone calls today. But the students here will ask the questions, and we'll let the conversation go wherever it goes. One headline I do want to – normally I cover the headlines, and then we take questions. But one headline I definitely have to cover, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, three-judge panel today looks like they're probably going to uphold President Trump's use of the National Guard in Los Angeles to stop the riots. This is a really, really important question, because 4 years ago or 5 years ago, we didn't get this right. So in 2020, whenever we had people burning cities all over this country, President Trump wanted to send in the troops and shut down the riots. And he had a Secretary of Defense and a general that said, no, you're not allowed to do that. You can't do that. And they fought him on it. They were wrong. He was right. And at the time, I said, look, there's 20 presidents that have done this in history. A dozen presidents that have done this in history. It's been done 20 times that the insurrection acts have been used. And it wasn't, you know, the first one to do it was not George H.W. Bush in 1992 when he shut down the riots in L.A. the last time. It was George Washington. So the father of the country was the first one to do what President Trump
Trump is doing right now. He did it with the Whiskey Rebellion in 17, I believe it was 94. The first Insurrection Act that was done was 1792. So you have all of these insurrection acts that are essentially Article 1, Section 8, where in paragraph 15, where it gives Congress the power to, quote, call forth the militia. In other words, call forth the National Guard to enforce the laws or put down a rebellion or prevent an insurrection. Enforcing the laws is what Donald Trump is doing right now. It's exactly what most of these presidents had done throughout history when they did the insurrection acts. And the Congress delegates that power to the president. So you don't want some congressman going over to the Pentagon and saying, yo, Pete, can you please send some troops out here? I'm going to call forth the militia myself. That wouldn't work very well. You'd have 435 congressmen and 100 senators trying to tell Pete Hegseth what to do as Secretary of Defense. So the president is the one that is delegated to through the Insurrection Acts. So that one headline I had to hit because that is a very important power of the president. And I don't think we're going to see the summer of love that we saw in 2020 where, you know, the goofball mayor up in Minneapolis said to the police, give up the precinct and let them burn the precinct. And once that happened in Minneapolis, it told every thug in the country, you can go burn down buildings, you can attack cops, you can do whatever you want, and nothing's going to happen to you. And that's why you had all those crazy riots all summer long in 2020 with Antifa and Black Lives Mafia. It's not Black Lives Matter, it's Black Lives Mafia. That's why you had them doing the things that they were doing all throughout 2020. That's not going to happen this time. Donald Trump is not going to be told no on this. He's going to do exactly what George Washington did. He's going to do what LBJ did. He's going to do what Kennedy did. He's going to do what George H.W. Bush did. And he's going to send in the troops to stop this and not allow it to spread all throughout the country. So I think that's why the No Kings rallies did not become what they could have become, like what happened in 2020, because everybody knew the president's going to use his power to stop this. And by the way, all this business of calling Donald Trump a tyrant and calling him a king, he's got to be the worst king in history. Like, somebody needs to send him to tyrant school or king school or something, because nobody apparently has taught him that if you're a king or a tyrant, you don't allow free speech at all. You don't pardon 1,500 people. You certainly don't, you know, make sure that the Second Amendment is upheld so that people can arm themselves. So somebody needs to teach the guy how to be a king or a tyrant. If we're going to call him a king or a tyrant, he needs to, you know, make sure that none of us have radio programs like I do. I'm joking. Y'all are supposed to laugh at that point. You're supposed to give me some good background noise here. Man, it's really hard. Tough audience. Tough audience. Anyway, all right. Actually, one other headline. Sorry, got to weigh into the fray on the whole Israel-Iran thing. A lot of people from our side of the aisle, sort of the conservative circles out there, split down the middle. Maybe not down the middle, but there's definitely an element within conservative circles that, totally understandable for justified reasons, is sick and tired of us getting involved and entangled in foreign wars and basically saying, let's not help Israel. We shouldn't be encouraging them to take out Iran or stop Iran's nuclear capability or whatever. We should be just hands off. Let's not be involved at all. I will admit, I am sick and tired of foreign entanglements. I never understood the whole Ukraine thing. I think Zelensky is a poser and an absolute, you know, joke of a president. And the fact that we've given hundreds of billions of dollars so that he could have yachts and everything else is just absurd to me. But all wars are not the same. And all countries that we support or oppose or, you know, get involved with are not the same. And when it comes to Israel, there's a biblical reason to support them. We're actually commanded to do so. But they're also the only political and economic ally that we have in the Middle East that has a free market economy and a constitutional republic and actually shares our philosophy on those things. So we should absolutely be supporting them and standing with them, whether or not we send troops in, whether or not, you know, now apparently we're helping with the air superiority over Iran, all of those things that Walker and I talked about on Tuesday. At this point, I think you got to trust the guy in the room. I think you got to trust the guy that you hired to handle these difficult situations, that he will push or pull as much as is necessary and only go as far as we absolutely have to. I don't think there's any possibility that Donald Trump wants to get us into a 10 or 20 year quagmire like we saw in Iraq or in Afghanistan or Vietnam or some of those things. I think he clearly wants to do what has to be done. Israel could do it by themselves. I don't even think they need us. Maybe they need these bunker busting bombs. I don't know. But they don't need us to do very much, if anything at all. And unlike Joe Biden, who was undermining Israel for the last couple of years, ever since October 7th, behind the scenes while giving lip service to acting like he was supporting them, I believe Donald Trump is actually supporting them behind the scenes. And if you are a student of history at all, you know the Six-Day War was literally a six-day war taking on essentially the entire Muslim world, and Israel won. And that, this is a little bit like that, what they're doing with Iran right now. I mean, they are the surgical strikes they're doing, where they're literally taking out a floor in a building instead of an entire building. They're just taking out the floor where the military leader is that they're after. It's remarkable what they're pulling off right now. It's military miracles left and right. The intelligence they have on the ground is absolutely phenomenal. That probably Mossad's probably the best intelligence agency on the planet, probably better than even our CIA, which I'm not enamored with our CIA like I used to be. But hopefully we're turning that around. It's basically been a leftist taken organization along with the FBI for the last 4 years. But I digress and go down the wrong rabbit hole, and we have to take a break. So anyway, as far as the Israel-Iran thing goes, I'm at this point where I'm saying trust the guy in the room. At least give a little bit of latitude to President Trump to see what's going to happen here. I do not want to be in a foreign entanglement either, but I also believe in the biblical command to support Israel. So all of that in the mix, it's muddy, it's messy. There's not a perfect solution, but I do think we can walk and chew gum and deal with this particular issue. And Iran is the funder of terrorism around the world, so they need a little bit of slapping around anyway. All right, quick break. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. We'll be right back at the Leadership Congress at the Florida Capitol. Stay with us.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with us today. We're at the Leadership Congress at the Florida State Capitol, which means we've got a lot of 16 to 25-year-old. Rush would have called them young skulls full of mush. But these are not young skulls full of mush. These are sharp, articulate, amazing young people, the next leadership, the next generation of leadership. And they're here actually exercising those skills, learning some of those skills. Tonight, we'll be learning about the timeless principles of liberty. They are debating on the House floor and committee. They're going to do all this really, really cool stuff. And it's just a great opportunity. By the way, patriotacademy.com. If you've got a young person that might be interested in coming to one of these programs, we still have one in Indiana. And Delaware's full, so don't go to that one. But Indiana in August, and then our big Texas National Leadership Congress is the last week of July. That one still has room. And then, of course, as I was talking about in the last segment, our 30-day Patriot Academy, Patriot Institute Summer Intensive. We still have a handful of scholarships to give out on that. That's a $2,000 scholarship available. So go to patriotacademy.com/institute. To apply for that. Okay, I got a line of students here with questions. So give the audience your name, where you're from, and what your question is.
Hello, I'm Benjamin Stimmiger. I'm from Orlando, Florida. And my question is, here at Patriot Academy, one of the things we primarily focus on is having good character. So I wanted to ask, what qualities does having a good character possess?
Very good question. And I'm very jealous of Senator Stenberger because he has incredible hair, and it's just not right. It's not fair. I want your hair. I'm coveting. I'm breaking the 10th commandment. So I'm already, that's not good character. See, you're not supposed to covet. It breaks the 10th commandment, but fantastic question and great hair. Okay. I think I'm going to answer in the context of where we are, right? So in the political arena and the kind of leaders that you want. And but this really does apply to every, no matter what you're going to go into, business, you know, whatever area that God's called you to. But I love the Exodus 18 command for the types of leaders that you should choose. Able men such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness. So number one, that you fear God, that you truly understand there's a higher being, and that your accountability is to God. Not even so much to your fellow man. There is an accountability to your fellow man, but it's first to God. So you therefore live your life according to Colossians 3:23. Everything we do the best that we can as unto God, not unto men. And that's going to just make us want to have good character, make us want to be able to perform well. So that's number one, is just having a fear of God. That's going to cause a lot of good character issues. But then when we say able men, and I think obviously that includes mankind, men and women, that it means that we are, we're showing ourselves, like Paul talked about, we're willing to study. We're willing to be ready to answer. We're willing to work hard to be capable of what God's called us to do. I think a lack of character causes us to be lazy and to not pursue the things that God has put in front of us with excellence, and to not do the hard work that it takes. You know, your generation is, I think, actually going to rebel against the lazy kind of previous generation's idea of, you know, this entitlement attitude of I shouldn't have to work hard. I shouldn't have to show up on time. I think you're actually going to turn that around. I think I'm seeing a new fire in the belly with especially with you guys right here in this room with this particular group to not be lazy and to and for your character to include that if you go to work for somebody and you're getting paid whatever you're getting paid by the hour, salary, whatever, that you've agreed to give your time. You've sold your time. You've sold your soul for that hour of time or for that 8 hours of that day and that you perform during that time, that you're not like, I can't remember where I was. I was walking by a security guard the other day, you know, and he's sitting there on his phone playing a game, not even looking around, not even paying attention, not actually doing security. And I was like, this guy's being paid to keep an eye on whatever's happening in this room. Clearly his head's in his phone. And yet, so he's literally stealing from his employer, being paid to do one thing, and yet he's doing something totally different. That's a character issue, right? So it's just literally being honest about the gifts that God's given you and making the most of them in whatever you're doing. So being able to do those things and then hating bribes. You know, the whole hating covetousness thing is, I mean, we know most of you probably came into this arena thinking everybody in politics is crooked, everybody's corrupt. It's not true. There is a lot of corruption. And there are a lot of people and we're all susceptible to it. Don't think you're perfect and that you could never be tempted by anything. You know, we're all flawed jars of clay. But there's a lot of good people in this arena that have character.
My name is Elizabeth. I am from Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And my question is, what are your thoughts on and are you excited for Donald Trump's Golden Dome?
What is the Golden Dome?
You know, Israel's Iron Dome.
Oh, Iron Dome. And he wants
yeah,
to do
so
a Golden
he's
Dome.
Doing, he's calling it the Golden Dome.
And where would it be? All over the U.S.?
All of the entire country.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's essentially, is it essentially the Ronald Reagan Star Wars thing finally come to pass. Is that
yeah.
Okay? Okay. Great.
Missile system, but here in America.
Excellent. And being living at Fort Bragg, are you in the military?
I come from a military family.
Come from a military family. Okay, great. I was just with a great friend of mine, Victor Marks, who, if you don't know who Victor Marks is, you need to go look up Victor Marks and get his book, The Dangerous Gentleman. But he was just at Fort Bragg with the Spec Ops guys and praying with them and having a great time. So anyway, great place to be from. I am 100% for it. I've been for it before I was born, which is when Ronald Reagan, no, actually I was born. I guess I was younger than y'all. But, you know, Reagan dreamed this up. Knowing that it would break the Soviet Union, that they couldn't possibly keep up with us economically trying to do the exact same thing. And back then in the 80s, people thought he was crazy. They called him crazy. And now here we are. We're living it. A friend of mine, General Bob Dees, he's actually the one that implemented the Iron Dome in Israel. So he was over that whole process. I don't know what's left technologically to get it done, but I think absolutely we should do it. The technology's there for countries like Iran or North Korea or whoever to be able to reach us where they couldn't reach us before. And so I don't think our enemies are going away. And I think there's going to be new enemies in the coming years. So I think it's brilliant. I have no idea what he's saying it's going to cost or what the technology is left to do it. But yes, I'd say I'm with you. All right. Who's next?
My name is Elijah. I'm from Land O'Lakes, Florida. So we are called to be good stewards of God's creation. At the same time, we hear a lot of hefty environmental regulations. So my question is, how do we balance our valuable, increasingly imperiled natural resources with our equally valuable and imperiled liberty?
That's a really well-worded question, man. Did you practice?
Perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps. It sounded
standing
like
in line for
no, but it's a really, really good question. Okay, I'll answer it this way. I think the proper approach, because you're exactly right, biblically, we are to reign and have dominion, and we're to take good responsibility of what we've been given, not waste it, not destroy it. And so I consider myself what Newt Gingrich called 30 years ago, an economically rational, scientifically based environmentalist. Which means if the science is there and it's solid and it's economically rational, I'm all for doing it to be good stewards of what we've been given. But then always, always, always the question to ask about any policy is a two-word question that y'all are going to be asking on every one of your bills tomorrow in committee and on the floor. Who decides? Every policy comes down to who decides. Is it the government? And if so, which government? Is it the individual or the community? Is it state, local, federal? And so in this case, when it comes to environmentalism, as people think of it today, that usually comes down to what do you do with property? What do you do with land? And the answer to the question, who decides what should be done with a piece of land, should always be the landowner. It should not be the government, unless the government owns the land. So if we come together as a society, the government's just us. So if we come together and say, hey, you know what? We want to buy up this particular piece of land in order to set aside a park or a green space or, you know, whatever it might be. And society says yes. So we as a people pull together our money through our taxes to buy that land. And we want to set it aside to only be a bird sanctuary, or only be a hunting place or whatever. Great. I think that's perfectly within the laws of nature and nature's God. But if everybody in this room gets together and decides, you know, Rick Green's got that really nice piece of land over there and we don't want to pay him for it, but we'd really like to just have it as a bird sanctuary. And you just decide to pass a law that says now my property can only be used as a bird sanctuary. The wrong answer has been given for who decides. It shouldn't be the community unless the community owns the land. And if I don't want to sell it, even if the community wants to buy it, I shouldn't have to. Unless now there is an eminent domain issue for actual public purpose of a road or an airport or something like that. I do not believe parks and green space and whatnot was intended by the founders when they wrote that in the Fifth Amendment. But anyway, so yeah, I think it comes down first to the individual. We should take good care of the resources that we've been entrusted with, but we should not tell other people what to do with their resources. And then of course the scientifically based part of it comes into this, the whole climate hoax. You know, it used to be global freezing, then it was global warming, then they decided it was climate change. Wait, you're saying that the climate changes? Wow, that's shocking. I mean, like, we didn't know that or anything. I mean, they use these just nebulous, ridiculous things with bad science, not this, oh, everybody agree, all scientists agree. No, only because you've silenced all the other scientists, right? That's the only time you have, when they say all the scientists agree and the science is settled, that's not science. Science is never settled. You're always questioning. You're always going back and testing. You're always challenging the hypothesis. It's the same thing with the environmental controls of your property. If they tell you how many houses you can put on your land, you're not free. There is no reason that the government should tell you how many homes you can have on your land or how much sewer you can do on your land. As long as you're not harming your neighbor, as long as you're not running your sewer off to the neighbor's property. I tell the guys that are our overlords in Texas right now that are trying to tell us what to do with our campus property. This is going to be a little bit too crass for some of you, but if the poop doesn't roll downhill based on how we design our septic system, who's going to have to live with the smell? We are, right? The ones that own the land. So we're going to make sure that the septic system works. We're going to make sure that the sewer rolls downhill and operates correctly because we want people to come visit the Patriot Academy campus. The reason the answer to who decides should be the landowner is because the landowner has the most at stake, not the community. If everybody owns it, nobody owns it. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but I'm all for us being good stewards. But the question of who decides who the steward is and who actually takes care of that property. Okay, let me make sure we got enough time here. Yes, let's see. I'm doing my math here. Okay, go ahead.
Hi there. My name is Gabriella Graff, and I'm from Monticello, Florida. And my question is, what is your opinion on judicial review, particularly the history behind it?
Oh, my goodness. See what I mean when I say these are not young skulls full of mush? We're getting questions on the biblical command for taking care of the land, judicial review. I mean, come on. Most 16 is a 25. How old are you?
16.
16, that's a 16-year-old asking me about the history of judicial review. And she probably even knows more about Marbury versus Madison than I do. So I've got to be careful how I answer this. So here's the problem. The court is an unelected, mostly unaccountable group of lawyers in Washington, D.C. for the most part, and then spread out throughout the country with the district judges and the courts of appeal. But let's just take the Supreme Court. 9 unelected, unaccountable lawyers in Washington, D.C. The founders knew that that type of body should not be making the decisions on policy. So judicial review should only be reviewing whether or not something that the government has done is actually constitutional and reviewing whether or not the law has been applied to the parties that are standing before the court. Other than that, the court has, in the words of Alexander Hamilton himself, neither force nor will. It controls neither the purse nor the sword. Who has the purse? Congress, thank you. Who has the sword? the president. So the court has neither of those. So it has neither force nor will, which is why Andrew Jackson said to the court, nice opinion, let me see you enforce it. There's a reason that every opinion of the court says at the top, opinion of the court. It's not decision of the court. It's opinion of the court. And therefore, they should be able to review to weigh in on the discussion and the debate, or perhaps say that is unconstitutional what you're doing. But the president and the Congress has the power to basically outvote them and say, no, you're wrong on that opinion. We're going to still do this. And then most importantly, the states have the ultimate power. They have the final say on everything if they're willing to use their power. The Constitution vests the power within the states to overrule the federal government through the amendment process. It's the ultimate overruling. The 11th Amendment was essentially doing that. There was a Supreme Court decision called Chisholm v. Georgia, and the states didn't like it. And so it took only 2 months. In 2 months, they did an amendment, the 11th Amendment, to overrule the U.S. Supreme Court and say, no, you got it wrong. But states have to use that power. Otherwise, people forget that it's even there. And most legislators don't even know that they have the power to do that. Fantastic question, man. We could go all day on that. So I do want to encourage you. Have you already been through Constitutional Live or Biblical Citizenship? Excellent. All right. So Constitutional Live, we dive into that a little bit more, and Biblical Citizenship even more. So, okay, let's get back to questions. As we always say here at the Core, we'll take your comments, questions, or insults, whatever you got. Okay. Is yours a comment, question, or an insult?
Mine is actually a Patriot Academy testimony that
That's even better. Go.
I'd like to share this with anyone that is possibly considering Patriot Academy or maybe has in the past, is not sure about coming again.
Wait, give your name and where you're
from. My name is Emma Melby. I am from Floral City, Florida, one stoplight town. Nobody knows where it is.
But that's all Floridians so far. We haven't had anybody outside of Florida, have we? Every question so far? Oh, that's right. North Carolina, Fort Bragg. How could I forget that? Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
Okay. So this is my fourth year. And at first I thought that I was coming here and I would learn about public speaking, or I just learned about government. But what I really, really learned about was boldness. It took me 4 years to finally figure out what I was learning here. But I learned to be bold for not only what I believed in, but also be bold for Christ. Mm-hmm. It taught me how to be bold in college. It taught me how to be bold, not exactly in the workforce, but with the world around me. And it taught me how to be bold with my faith. And because of that, I've learned to be able to not exactly barge through things, but be able to hold fast to my ground. And I encourage literally anyone that is considering coming to Patriot Academy, come to the Patriot Academy so you can feel that boldness yourself. You can watch people be bold. As my wonderful governor pointed out this year in her speech, be the person that wants to step in to fill in the gap that is so desperately needed to shield people from, I don't know. I lost my
word
there.
This is too good.
I'm getting emotional.
This is too good.
And what I would say is to people that are holed up or they're nervous about this sort of thing, as I was in Patriot Academy, and why it took me so long to learn to be bold was because I had not yet asked God to fill me with that boldness. That boldness that Peter and John first felt in Acts when they were first speaking the gospel. I asked that God come into me with the Holy Spirit and just fill me with your boldness. I ask that everybody ask that question. Everybody ask the Holy Spirit to come into them so that it will give them the boldness to stand for truth and to remain dangerous. So that's my testimony. I hope everybody who listens to this comes to Patriot Academy now.
I love it.
I love it. That was so good. Yeah, give her a hand. We got a whole line of questions here. We'll see if we can get them all in the final segment. Stay with us, folks. I'm Rick Green. You are listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. We're coming to you live from Florida at the state capitol with a bunch of amazing young people doing Patriot Academy's Leadership Congress. To find out more, go to patriotacademy.com.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach at the State Capitol in Florida. We got a lot of great young people here doing our Leadership Congress. If you'd like to send a young person 16 to 25 years old to one of our Leadership Congresses, go to patriotacademy.com. And if you're a military veteran, you don't have to be 16 to 25. You can come at any age, third week of August to the Patriot Academy campus for the Military Veterans Leadership Congress. Every military vet that's been through that tells me afterwards, I now know what I was fighting for and I know what my next mission is. So if you're listening to me right now and you're a military veteran, thank you for allowing me to be free, for keeping my freedom alive. Now let me give back to you. Come to the Patriot Academy Military Veterans Leadership Congress. All right, we got the governor now. So question, comment, or insult?
I have a question for you, Mr. Green.
And where you're from?
So I am Shekinah Lintz, and I am from a small town called Bolivar, Missouri, in Southwest Missouri. And our state voters recently approved a constitutional amendment that expanded abortion access. In the light of legislative change, Governor Kehoe is now able to call for a special election that would overturn this amendment. So my question to you is, he's priorly opposed to essentially address this amendment. What do you think that he should do? But more importantly, what do you think other states should do in light of these amendments just changing their whole constitution and overruling the legislative process that we know is working in America?
Yeah, great question, Governor, and a huge battle, not just for y'all in Missouri, right? There's so many states that are dealing with this after Dobbs, and obviously Dobbs was a great decision. I wish that it had just confirmed the fact that of what the Declaration and I believe the Constitution both confirm, that abortion should be illegal in this country as it was before Roe v. Wade. But unfortunately, it just essentially sent it back to the states. Still a win, but not quite the win I was hoping for, because we knew this was going to happen, right? That now we have battles in all 50 states. And frankly, some people just weren't prepared for this next level of the battle. And so we have lost several of these initiatives on the ballot because of, frankly, deception most of the time. Usually these campaigns are funded with outrageous amounts of money from the left. Usually the amendment itself is worded in a very confusing way. It's almost not a fair fight. It's a mess, right? And so that's kind of how we've gotten into this. And I don't think that's over. I think we're going to see more of that in several states, even in the next couple of years. And we've just got to get better at fighting that particular battle. And that means not only better in terms of our pro-life organizations, but we as citizens, we've got to be better at digging into the details, just not being so... not be so simple. I think we Christians sometimes are just too easily outmaneuvered in these kind of battles. We've got to start being cunning, and we've got to start being willing to get down in the trenches and fight effectively. And so, to your point, obviously, I would hope. I'm not sure what all the tools are that are available to your governor and under your constitution in Missouri, but I would hope that the people of Missouri, which is a very conservative, pro-life state, right? So the fact that this went the wrong way is the same thing that happened in a couple of these other states. I would hope that they would put the pressure on, and if he doesn't do it, and the legislature doesn't do it, then the next step is to throw him out and to throw out a bunch of those legislators and get a whole new wave in your state. And that may be the issue that is a catalyst for getting a lot of new blood into your state legislature, or perhaps, and I don't know anything about your governor. I didn't even recognize the name. So I don't know if they're good or bad or whatever,
he's
but
kind of neutral.
He's one of those. Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah. Those are the worst. Lukewarm. Spew them out of our, anyway. Yeah. So I'm probably going to meet him next week at something and be like, oh, sorry about that. Yeah. So anyway, great question. You're very welcome. All right, next up.
Hi, my name is Abigail Thomas, and I come from Oviedo, Florida. And my question is a little...
Wait, what? Oviedo?
Oviedo.
Oviedo.
Oviedo. Oh. It's right next to Orlando, so we're in the small city next to the big city. But my question is a little niche. It's about a new form of technology that came out last week. They put a brain implant in someone's hand and head, and he was able to talk for the first time in his entire life. Is this kind of technology that's allowing wonderful innovations, but is this a blessing to humanity, or is this more a weapon of great destruction?
Yeah, I think it's a great question that applies to so many things, right? I mean, not only AI and a lot of the technology that we're dealing with today, that same question has been asked throughout history. Every time there's a new technology that could be used for evil, can we use it for good? Or are we then compromising or helping that evil to grow because we use it for good? And I've always taken the attitude of the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, and that if we can capture those areas and use them for good, and then also be responsible in our government to where we have good people in office that can actually use the power of government to outlaw good, because that is it's fine to say some things are just not going to be allowed in our community, our state, our nation. Liberty does not mean everybody gets to do anything and everything that they want with no boundaries whatsoever. There are things that we shouldn't allow for, and we're going to have to start really digging down deep and asking tough questions about technology. What do we want to allow for or not allow for? Same thing could be said about, in vitro fertilization and a lot of these other technologies. Is when is it used for good? When is it used for bad? How do we get ourselves in a position to be the decision makers about making sure that it can't be used for bad,
or that we reduce the amount of bad that actually gets used. So I would definitely put this technology in that category. Maybe a best example is older, before most of y'all in the room were born, but the big debate in 2001, 2002, 2003 was stem cell research and whether or not to do embryonic stem cell research or adult stem cell research, or how to do the stem cell research without killing embryos. And, you know, George Bush, actually, this was one of the issues that I think he got mostly right in saying it should be adult stem cell research, not embryonic stem cell research. And the science showed that, right? We had hundreds of discoveries with the adult stem cell research that worked amazing things, not quite as amazing as what you just mentioned, which is incredible, but amazing things, and none from embryonic stem cell research. So when we did it God's way, then we got good results. When we did it, you know, I think the wrong way and took innocent life in order to try to do some sort of medical experiment, it ended up not working. This technology thing is going to be, I think, a more difficult situation. You know, you've heard Elon Musk talk about a lot of the things that could be done with AI and with this type of thing, literally within the brain. And, you know, I'm old school, man. I can hear the old, you know, small town, you know, 50 member church preachers and the mark of the beast thing. And, you know, could this be it? Maybe. I don't know. It's kind of scary to think about the implants that can go into our brains now. Or, you know, are we going to have an implant to be able to pay at the grocery store and, you know, swipe from our social credit, credit card? So, yeah, I don't know if that really answered it or not. I didn't mean to dance around it that much. It absolutely could be used for good or for bad. I don't think we outlaw it just because it could be used for either. I think we find ways to outlaw the bad and still be able to be smart enough to use the good. And as Christians, we should be at the forefront. We should be the first out there with technology. We should be the scientist. And if you look at most scientific discoveries in the history of mankind that were major, that changed things, it was Christians. It was people that studied the Bible. And they discovered those things with a view of the Creator, not just what now today is mostly atheist in the scientific community. So it's a very different animal. But anyway, that was a long answer to your question. You're welcome. All right.
Dan's up.
Hi, my name is Tatum Wang, and I live in St. Augustine, Florida. I serve as on the board of directors for the Continuum of Care, which is a sub-agency of the Florida Department of Housing and Urban Development, and we work to mitigate homelessness and supporting those homeless families and community members. What do you think is the solution to homelessness?
Oh, man. Okay, so the first thing I would say is not the solution to homelessness is what they've tried to do in LA and a lot of these areas, where at first they go in and literally provide housing. Like, I'm talking housing, not a shelter, but literally a full home for free to people, thinking that that's going to solve the problem of homelessness. It's not the lack of a home that is the problem. Usually it's you know, a veteran with PTSD, or it's a drug situation or other problems. And then sometimes it's somebody's just down on their luck because they literally have lost everything and have nowhere to go. And if you'd asked me this about 2 years ago, I could have answered so much better, because I'd just done a paper on it and read a bunch of stuff about, I can't remember the term that they use, and you probably know because you're in the middle of it, but it's a philosophy that these big cities have adopted that's created this just massive homelessness and in the middle of the city and in the downtown streets. And it's obviously not worked. It's failed miserably in all of those states. So I would actually turn it back on you and say, based on your research and what you've been doing over the last few months with this group, what do you think the solution is that we should be modeling?
One of my favorite things about the Continuum of Care is how we partner with so many different local agencies that are all working in a very specific niche for the community. And we partner all of those organizations together. So when we have a homeless family or homeless member that we meet on the street or that contact our organization, we put them in with this network of all of these different agencies that are working together and sharing their resources and working to help these families. And so I think that it's not just about putting them in a house, because a house doesn't make a home.
That's right.
It's the services that we can provide in a lot of those nonprofit agencies, and recognizing that not one person and not one organization can do everything, and that you need to connect all these different organizations. A lot of communities are so divided, and bringing those communities together and bringing those organizations together so they can all offer services.
Yeah. Good. Very good answer, man. You've been doing this. By the way, her dad's a firearms instructor, which is really cool. And does a lot of other stuff too, but that's where Larry and I really hit it off.
And a lawyer and a martial artist.
He's sort of like the founding fathers, you know? They were Renaissance men. They did a little bit of everything. I will add one thing to our discussion, and it basically comes from a book that had a huge influence on Ronald Reagan. He read it when he was young. It was called That Printer of Udell's, and the whole message of the book was essentially, when the church recedes and we just send money to the government to do these things, it never solves the problem as well as if the church was the one stepping up to help those in need, because of what you just said, which is it's not just a physical house or to take it further, a meal or a check. It's got to be, you got to hit the heart, and you got to hit the whatever the heart issue is and be able to hit the spiritual need as well. And I think that's one of the reasons we have such a big, not only homelessness problem, but all of the major problems we're facing in the country is the church not doing its job. We stepped out of the public arena and we stopped providing those services. When the church is the epicenter of the community does really, really well. When government becomes the epicenter of the community, it's not as good at those things. Government is supposed to protect your rights, not provide for you.
Hi, my name is Elise McGowan. I live in Venice, Florida, but I'm originally from Canada. And I'm very curious on your thoughts about President Trump's potential plan to make Canada the 51st state. Do you think it's going to happen? Do you support it? What are your thoughts?
Weren't you supposed to finish that with like, yaw or something like that? Like,
It sort of comes out once in a while, but I don't really think too much of it because I'm used to it. So
what do I think about Canada being the 51st state? Was that it? Is it even close?
No, that's exactly how you would say it.
That's how I would say it if I was okay. Yeah, no. There's parts of Canada that I would absolutely love to be part of the United States so that I can go hunting there. And there are parts of Canada that I would definitely not want to be part of the United States because it'd be like having another Portland or Seattle. Overall, though, I actually thought it was one of the best trolls. That Trump's the master troller, right? He's so good at this. Just is like he's got the mirror and he's got everybody like the cat looking over here. And in the meantime, he's over here doing good stuff. But this one, I think he's a lot more serious about it than people think he is. And it is not outside the realm of possibility. There are a lot of things that we have in common. I mean, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms is based on our Declaration of Independence and on our Bill of Rights. And it's very, very similar in so many different ways with regard to those basic human rights. The economy is much closer to us than a lot of other countries, but has moved socialist in the last 40 or 50 years more than America has. You know, there's a lot of people in Canada that think like Americans, that are you know, down to earth, God-fearing, you know, common sense people. And then, you know, there's the same problems we have in our big cities, y'all have in your big cities. So overall, if it was one state and they only got two U.S. senators, the problem is y'all would end up with like 40 congressmen. With I can't remember, how many's in Canada now? What's the population of Canada? You know off the top of your head?
We are about equivalent to California population-wise.
Okay, so about 55 million then. So yeah,
I think more around 40.
About 40? Okay, so you probably have, yeah, you probably have 40, 45 congressmen. So that's a big, right, that's a big influence in the future of the country. I'd be all for you being a territory so that you could have delegates in Congress, but you don't get to vote. That way I get to go hunting, but yet y'all don't influence our politics. That's a perfect, can we shake on that? Let's make that deal happen. All right, Senator, done deal. Okay, we're almost out of time. Let's try to get one more in before we shut her down for the day. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Ost. I'm from Orlando, Florida, and I just wanted to give a really short testimony about what Patriot Academy has done for me. So we talk a lot here about, you know, our character and the LIFT principles and the legislature, but something that I really want to point out that really has shaped my life is just the presence that the Holy Spirit has here. I came first in 2023, and it had been a dream of mine to be here for so long until then. In the first year that I came here, I really felt the Holy Spirit and the Lord's leading on my life. And that happens every single year that I come back here. So these are literally my three favorite days of the whole year. And so anyways, I would just really encourage anyone who's thinking about coming, even if the legislature or politics is not your thing, like you absolutely need to try it out because it seriously will change your life, even if you get other direction from the Lord to go somewhere else. So that's just my short little testimony. And I just highly encourage everyone who can to come to Patriot Academy.
Wow, I need to slip this girl a 20. Hang on, wait, I got to reach my pocket. That was great. I can't think of a better way to end it. Sorry, guys, we're out of time for the show, but we can do your questions in just a second after we close out. And it is so true. I mean, that is the most important thing. I tell people all the time, even when you come to the Patriot Academy campus and you do one of our handgun defense classes, or you do the legislative simulation, or hopefully some of y'all will come for the whole month this July for the intensive, or maybe for a whole year to the Patriot Institute, that all the buildings are great and all the legislative simulations are great, but the best thing that happens at that campus are the nights around the fire, playing the guitar, praising the Lord, and just having those epiphany moments about your life and your relationship with the Lord and your relationship with your fellow sojourners. It's the most important thing that we do. So I appreciate you giving us that incredible shout out. All right, folks, we're out of time. Thank you so much for listening today. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. We've been coming to you for the Florida State Capitol. Thank you, Patriots, for joining me on the program today. You ever wonder why our society is so ravenous to abort babies? Well, according to a former Satanist, the demonic forces have a bloodlust for the innocents. They sickly believe that the blood sacrifice empowers evil. Make no mistake, we are fighting a spiritual battle as we protect the most innocent among us, babies, in their mother's womb. Preborn stands on the front lines of this battle. Their network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, often next to abortion mills, where unspeakable evil takes place every day. Preborn offers God's love and life to protect hurting women and precious preborn babies. Please make your most generous gift to empower good and rescue precious souls. Every time a baby is saved, which happens 200 times a day, good conquers evil. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound that doubles a baby's chance at life. Donate securely today. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, or go to preborn.com. Preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.